Thank you, Mr. Storrs. Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Sabbath to you all. Last month, it looks like many of you were here at that time, I gave a message that I titled, Dangerously Devious, Diabolical, and Distracting Digital Devices of the Devil. And again, some of you may have remembered that. I think I shortened it down, and actually I probably should have said, beware the digital devices of Satan, because the purpose was simply to promote an awareness of the potential for very serious problems related to our use and misuse of technology, in particular devices with a screen, smartphones, computers, etc. Don't be unaware. Don't be ignorant of the devices of Satan, as Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 2:11. Today, I'd like to present a follow-up to that message. You could title it, Dealing with the Digital Devices of Satan. And we're going to emphasize this, dealing with devices, from a parental perspective. How to help your children deal with the dangers of technology. We'll start with a brief review and highlight some of the main points from my previous message. We noted Jesus' parable of the sower in Matthew 13, and he warns us not to be distracted by the cares of the world so we're choked off from God's word and become unfruitful and unproductive. We also noted that in Ephesians 5, Paul tells us to live our lives wisely and redeem the time, because the environment in which we're living is becoming progressively more evil, and we can easily be tempted by that evil through our devices, through technology. We pointed out there's nothing inherently wrong with a digital device, a smartphone, a computer, etc. It's just a tool, and it can be put to good use and provide a very helpful service. But like any tool, it can be misused. However, unlike any other tool, a device like a smartphone actually encourages you to use it and even misuse it. Most tools don't do that. We went on to note three broad categories of concern. The first involved the addictive, time-wasting properties of these devices and how so many of their features are intentionally designed into them to be addictive. The second involved the mental health issues, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, irrational and antisocial behavior were a few that I named, although I should have included ADHD and autism in the list as well. Third was the easy access to evil, both evil mind-warping content and access to evil sadistic people, predators who prey on children and young adults. Something I did not mention last time and would be a fourth area of concern is the research that's beginning to show the negative impact of the devices not only on a person's mental health, but also on their physical health, which only makes sense because if you're on your device all the time, you're most likely not moving. And physical movement is vital for good health. There may be some other health concerns. Maybe you've heard about the concern about radiation from your smartphone. I don't know much about that, and we're not going to go into that here. Most importantly, of course, is that all four of these concerns involve our spiritual health. Finally, in that first message, we noted that while tech addiction problems can and do plague older adults, it's especially concerning for our young people for two basic reasons. First, was simply a lack of life experience. And second was brain development, in particular, the prefrontal cortex of the brain, the part of the brain that influences impulse control, planning, and good judgment. And we noted that the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed or conditioned until a person reaches their mid to late 20s. Now, since giving that first message, I've done more reading and research, and I now realize that I greatly understated not only the potential harm, but also the actual harm that is being done by these devices. More and more studies now show how dangerous these devices, smartphones in particular, really can be. The emotional and mental health problems being caused are far more serious and extensive than I previously noted. So how do we deal with the problem? As I mentioned earlier, we'll focus mostly on young people and what steps parents can take to help their children avoid becoming slaves of technology or victims of some really bad stuff that's out there. Back last October, I watched and I took extensive notes from a free online seminar from the Love and Logic Institute. I've watched a number of those. I think I've even mentioned those in some of my other messages. They're put on by Dr. Charles Fay and Dr. Daniel Amen, and this one in particular was called Technology Misuse and Addiction. Also had a phone conversation with Dr. Kayleen Hannaway-Scriber after my previous message, and I got some more information, more input from her. And between the two of them, I combined their recommendations, almost all of which overlapped, into seven main points. How do we help our kids, our teens, learn self-control through these devices, with these devices? Number one, big one here, focus on building a loving relationship with your kids. This involves a number of things, one of which, of course, is communication. From early on, have communications and conversations with your kids about the subject. Warn them and explain to them how so much of what they have access to on their screens actually goes completely against God's laws. Explain the addictive nature of the devices and how they and all of us actually are vulnerable. We're all being targeted. Help them realize that we're facing dangers that previous generations have never had to deal with before. And of course, don't limit your conversations just to technology. Good relationship with your kids means you'll discuss all sorts of topics with them, and especially topics that they're interested in. Notice Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6, verse 7 gives us some very important parenting guidelines which we need to apply to technology use. It starts out as the people of Israel are preparing to enter the promised land, and God is reminding them of the importance of keeping His commandments. Referring to the commandments in Deuteronomy 6, verse 7, God says, "You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." Parents are to have ongoing conversations with their kids, start of the day conversations, mealtime conversations, driving in the car conversations, bedtime conversations. Make sure that you teach God's commandments, His ways, and His instructions, but also in the context of digital devices. Conversation's important. But to build a good relationship with your kids, it's also important to actually do things with them. Do things with your kids. Do things that don't involve technology. Read good books to them. Get out and do activities with them. Show them they can have fun without devices. Play games, run races, play catch, shoot baskets, build something. Build something with Legos. Go for a walk, go hiking. You kind of get the idea. Doing activities like these will also help with point number two. Point number two, strengthen their brain. Strengthen the connections between your child's prefrontal cortex and the rest of their brain. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." So set the neural pathways during childhood. Train and strengthen the connections between the prefrontal cortex and the rest of the brain when they're young. And it'll help them when they're older. How do you do that? Those of you who like to take notes in outline form, I've listed subpoints. Subpoints under number two. Subpoint A, sleep. Make sure your kids are getting enough sleep. 8 to 10 hours a night. Their brains need time to recharge. Take their devices at night, the experts say. Some kids will hate you for it, but ultimately they'll hate you more if you don't. I'm quoting there. Sounds good, though. Subpoint B, strengthen your brain. Vigorous physical exercise. You might remember that Paul tells Timothy that exercise profits a little. That's 1 Timothy 4:8. And the type of exercise that Paul's talking about is vigorous physical exercise. It's the kind of training that an Olympic athlete would do. Vigorous exercise is very good for young developing minds, brains, as well as their bodies. Subpoint C, face-to-face interactions, face-to-face conversations. Kids need to practice social interaction without technology. Learning to develop social skills, good social skills, and how to read social cues is good exercise for their brains. I think I'm plagiarizing what Kayleen told me. She gave me permission to, though. There's no substitute for real-time, in-person social connections. Kayleen calls digital devices experience blockers. Experience blockers. They deprive kids of the opportunities they need for healthy brain development. For me, this brings to mind so many of the kids I see at school. They walk around in their own little world, cell phone in their hand, earbuds in their ears, completely oblivious to the social world around them. Subpoint D, enjoy God's creation. Kayleen says to make sure your child has time to experience the outdoors. Experience nature. Again, it's good for your brain. E, boredom, or at least a certain amount of it. I mentioned this briefly in my previous message, but a brain that has been overstimulated by screen usage and the resultant dopamine release, we talked about this last time too, needs an opportunity to reset its chemistry. Got to get your brain chemistry rebalanced. There is value in completing a long, boring, tedious task. It's good for your brain. But there's also something very satisfying about completing a boring job, a difficult job, one that you don't necessarily like doing. And if it requires physical effort, it's all the better. It's a feeling of satisfaction that is longer lasting than the dopamine hit you might get when you score so many points on a video game. It's healthier, too, mentally, physically, and emotionally. I trimmed one of our arborvitae hedges yesterday. It took quite a while, well over an hour, maybe 2 hours. I can't remember exactly. But it still feels good. Maybe because I know I don't have to do it tomorrow. But my brain chemistry has been reset, too. It's in balance now. I don't know if you can tell or not. Paul tells us that trials and difficulties make us stronger. They benefit us. And we can view dull, boring, difficult jobs as trials, as mini trials that strengthen us. They can even prepare us and prepare our kids to take on the challenge of bigger trials with some level of confidence and courage. Last subpoint under strengthening the brain, subpoint F, prayer and meditation. Taking time to think about the purpose and the meaning of one's life is something that even small children can be taught to do. A key piece of this is teaching our kids how to help other people. Encourage them to develop an outward mindset where they meditate and pray for the needs of other people. 2 Timothy 3 is a commonly quoted passage and is relevant here because digital devices encourage an unhealthy focus on the self. And it's a big part of the reason we're seeing so many mental health problems among our nation's young people. Obviously, there can be other factors that influence mental health. But screen devices encourage an inward and self-absorbed mindset. They discourage self-control, and they encourage pleasure-seeking instead. They discourage patience and encourage instant gratification. 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 4. But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Self-centeredness is not good for your brain. Meditating and praying for others is. Again, I'm not a brain expert here, but I'm relying on people who are. And I can see where what they say is consistent with what's in the Bible. Point three, model good behavior. Be a good role model. Limit your own use of technology. Model the kind of behavior that you want your kids to adopt. Interact with people face-to-face. Interact with your kids face-to-face. Don't sit around scrolling on your phone when you could be doing something with your kids, things that I mentioned previously. Number four, set limits. set firm and loving limits. Remember that the prefrontal cortex has been described as the brakes and steering wheel on a car. And a teenager is like a high-powered sports car with bad brakes and faulty steering. The parent then has to be willing to apply the brakes and do some of the steering for them. And that includes setting limits. The use of technology is not a right. It's a privilege. And a parent has to have that sort of mindset. In the Love and Logic seminar, they recommended telling your teens, number one, you may use your device as long as you are pleasant. But you must shut it off when I ask you to. And number two, you may keep your device as long as I have access to it with the passwords. I came across a timely and interesting article last week in the Epoch Times newspaper about a former Secret Service agent. Her name is Evie Pampouras, and she helped protect four United States presidents and their families. About 2 years ago, she became a mother, and in addition to writing a book on how people can protect themselves, she offers six ways parents can teach their kids to avoid danger. She mentions, teach them to trust their instincts, their intuition. Think twice about sleepovers. Be careful in crowded places. Teach them what to do in case of assault. And build their confidence. She suggests taking lessons in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Have no comment on that. If you were counting, that's five of the six ways. But can you guess what was number one on her list? She says, say no to screens. Her advice is to wait until your child is mature enough to understand who they should listen to and what to avoid, who to listen to and what to avoid before letting them have their first device. She doesn't say specifically what age that is, but even then she says to monitor their use. In her case, her daughter is about 2 years old and has never been in front of a screen. No phones, no tablets, no TV. She points out two basic digital dangers that concern her as a parent, and we've already discussed both of them. One, predatory people. But for her second point, I like the way her reasoning is stated. As a parent, you should be the strongest influence in your child's life. But if your child is in contact with other people online, you have strong competition. Videos, social media influencers, and all kinds of people telling your kid what to think and what to believe. Even if they're not predators, the child is going to be taking on other people's values, and you may not agree with those values. It's already hard enough, she says, to be the voice, to be that voice of reason for your kid. Now you're introducing outside entities that you cannot control. As we mentioned earlier, one of the limits should be no devices at night, no smartphones in the bedroom. Kids need their sleep. Adults need their sleep. Also, no devices at mealtime. It's time to eat and be sociable. My wife's always telling me that. Be sociable at dinner time. Okay. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, has consulted with some of the experts and has joined them in endorsing the following recommendations. She says, and I think she'd like to apparently see some laws concerning this. No smartphones before high school, no social media before 16, and phone-free schools. One of those experts that she relied on is a guy named Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. He's written a book titled The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. I have yet to read it, but what I've heard about it, it sounds pretty good. In referencing and endorsing the recommendations in this book, another writer named Brad Littlejohn posted an article with the Epoch Times Online in which he states, "Turns out that giving 12-year-olds a 24/7 distraction machine, access to a stash of hardcore pornography, and a hotline to sexual predators to carry around in their pockets is not a good idea. Frankly," he says, "it may not even be a good idea for 32-year-olds, especially if they're trying to model healthy habits for their kids. I know that my smartphone," he says, "makes me a worse parent. And even if I need one, or tell myself that I need one for work, I sure wish I didn't have to bring it everywhere." Now, some people are suggesting that we outlaw smartphones until a certain age. And they've got some interesting reasoning. Can we really trust a 14-year-old with dangerous technology? Well, would we trust a 14-year-old with a driver's license? Interesting to think about. Dangerous technology. Family technology limits are necessary. And based on some of these recommendations, you'll have to sit down with your family to determine the specifics of what might work best in your situation. And any rules or limits that you set will not be as successful unless they're thoroughly discussed as a family. And of course, here's where having a good relationship with your kids really helps. Point number five, monitor and supervise. Once the limits are set, once the rules are in place, kids still need supervision and monitoring by an adult. A child should not be left to do it himself. Don't need to turn there, but Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." The Love and Logic presenters actually recommend that parents track their kids' devices and do surprise spot checks on their phones. Number six, enforce the limits. Provide loving accountability and be consistent. We discussed Matthew 18:8 in my last message. If your kids are struggling and can't adhere to the limits, maybe you suspect that they've got an addiction problem, or you can't adhere to the limits yourself, then you may have to apply the principle of Matthew 18:8. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. So if the hand is scrolling too much on the phone or clicking too much on the mouse, what do we do? Well, we don't cut off the hand, but we do cut off the device that the hand is connected to. Matt Miller gave me a good suggestion after my last message. He thought this would have been really, really effective when I mentioned Matthew 18:8. So I suppose we could call it we're not going to apply Matthew 18:8. You could apply the principle of Matthew Miller. He said, "What you should have done, Bruce, you should have had a hammer up there and an old smartphone, and you should have just banged that hammer on the smartphone right at that instant." I said, yeah, people might have taken me seriously. They might have taken out their phones. Of course, they don't have hammers in here, probably. Hammer. You ever notice what the logo is on Work with Miller, on his truck? Work with Miller, and there's a big hammer underneath his logo. At some point, though, you might have to say, we're worried, you might have to tell your kid, we're worried that you may be becoming addicted to your device. So we're going to take it from you to see how you can handle not having it. And if it comes to that, expect pushback and anger. They might think it's really harsh. But do what the experts say. It's worth it. I'll quickly reference a few more scriptures here. It might sound harsh, but Proverbs 15:10 says, harsh discipline is for him who forsakes the way, and he who hates correction will die. Hebrews 12:11 says, no chastening, no discipline seems to be joyful for the present, but painful, and expect that. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. When you enforce limits, your kids may be angry with you in the short run, but it's better than having them angry with you in the long run if you don't. Dr. Kayleen says that you can tell them that their brains are in a special stage of development and that you simply want to help them train their brains to work more effectively in the future. Should also add that there can be phone addiction problems that are so bad and so extreme that some parents may have to seek professional help. Finally, number 7, seek God's help. Pray for wisdom and guidance as a parent. Pray that God protects your kids from what you cannot protect them from. Pray that they are not led into temptation and that they are protected from evil. And pray also for the help of God's Spirit. We talked a lot about strengthening the brain, but it's not just a matter of neural connections and dopamine and chemical imbalances. We want a mind that is guided and influenced by a special power, the extra power of God's Spirit, a spirit of self-control and a sound mind. Brethren, we live in perilous times, and parenting now is perhaps more challenging than it has ever been. The good news for you, the parent, is that you have more influence than you think. With God's help, use that influence, and let's make a concerted effort to protect ourselves and our children from the dangers posed by digital devices.